Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Prison Litigation Reform Act and Fee Payments Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On January 12, 2016, the Supreme Court decided Bruce v. Samuels. The Prison Litigation Reform Act of 1995 provides that prisoners qualified to proceed in forma pauperis must nonetheless pay an initial partial filing fee, set at 20% of the greater of the average monthly deposits in the prisoner's account, or the average monthly balance of the accounts over the preceding 6 months. They must then pay the remainder of the fee in monthly installments of 20% of the preceding month's income, credited to the prisoner's account. The initial partial fee is assessed on a per-case basis, that is, each time the prisoner files a lawsuit. This case involves a dispute over the calculation of subsequent monthly installment payments when more than one fee is owed. Petitioner Antoine Bruce, a federal inmate, contends that he should only have to pay 20% of his monthly income without regard to the number of cases filed for which fees are owed. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit disagreed and adopted the per-case approach advocated by the government, in which a prisoner must pay 20% of his monthly income for each case he has filed. Granting certiorari to resolve a split in the Court of Appeals on this issue, the Supreme Court unanimously affirmed the judgment of the D.C. Circuit. Justice Ginsburg delivered the opinion of the court, holding that monthly installment payments, like the initial partial fee, are to be assessed on a per-case basis. To discuss the case, we have Elbert Lin, who is the Solicitor General of West Virginia. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Lin.
The issue in the case is a pretty straightforward and narrow question of statutory interpretation about the Prison Litigation Reform Act. Under the PLRA, Congress has required prisoners who, even though they qualify to proceed in forma pauperis or under pauper status, they nevertheless have to pay the fees in both an initial partial filing fee and then sort of over time pay back all of the fees that were due, the filing fees that were due. And the question in the case, which has divided the circuits 4-3 until this particular case, which came out of the D.C. Circuit, and then it was divided 5-3, is whether those fees need to be paid back by prisoners on a per-case basis, or what's also known as the simultaneous basis, or a per-prisoner basis. And the reason that comes up is that there's a formula for how prisoners have to pay back the fees. They have to pay an initial partial filing fee, which is the 20% of the greater of the average monthly deposits in the petitioner's account, or the average monthly balance of the account over the preceding 6 months. Then, to complete payment of the filing fee, they have to pay in monthly installments 20% of the preceding month's income credited to the prisoner's account. And so if the payments are required on a per-case basis or the simultaneous method, that means that if they have, say, four different cases, then they could pay up to five different cases at one time because it's only 20% of their preceding month's income. So you could take 100% of the preceding month's income and pay the filing fees that are due in installments for five different cases. The per prisoner or sequential basis method would mean that they would only be paying back one case at a time. And so they would pay 20% of the preceding month's income, and it would go until that one case is paid off, and then the next case would come up, and then the prisoner would pay back the filing fee for those cases. So it is just a question of statutory interpretation, and I'll just walk through the petitioner's arguments and the respondent's arguments, and then I'll get to the opinion, which is actually quite short. So the petitioner raised a couple different arguments as a typical statutory construction case proceeds. They made an argument based on the text, they made an argument based on the context, they made an argument based on purpose, and then they made a constitutional avoidance argument and then some policy arguments. The main textual argument is that the particular provision in question, just 28 U.S.C. 1915b2, talks about how the petitioner has to pay to the clerk of court, singular, 20% of the preceding month's income to pay off, quote, filing fees, plural. And so the petitioner makes a big deal about the contrast between the single clerk of court and the plural filing fees, and suggests that Congress intended there that even where there are multiple filing fees, that's what they take from the plural filing fees, there is only one payment due to the clerk of court, so one particular clerk of court at a particular point in time. The petitioner acknowledges that other parts of the statute, other parts of 28 U.S.C. 1915, including 1915b1, which relates to what a prisoner has to do at the outset of a case, speaks in terms of a single case, but says that, you know, b2 refers to filing fees plural, and that's sort of the big textual hook. He then makes a number of other sort of contextual arguments, including that if Congress had intended to adopt the per case as opposed to per prisoner, the simultaneous as opposed to sequential method, Congress would have said in the statute something about what happens after five cases. So because the payment is, again, 20%, after five cases you've maxed out what the petitioner's previous monthly income was at 100%, and there's no indication in the statute as to what to do after those five cases. Another argument that they make in terms of context is there is a $10 minimum. So the statute actually says that no monthly installments are required unless the prisoner has more than $10 in his account. And the petitioner says, if it's that clearly indicates that Congress intended the prisoner to have some money in his account at all periods of time, that the statute is not intended to draw down entirely what a prisoner has in his or her account, and the per prisoner, the sequential method, is more consistent with that because it would only take 20% of the previous month's income, whereas the per case or simultaneous method could actually draw down the account to zero. They also make a purpose argument. The prisoner acknowledges that the Prison Litigation Reform Act was intended to deter frivolous filings by prisoners, but says that that's not the only purpose. It was to deter frivolous filings, but also to encourage meritorious filings. And so he says that the per case or simultaneous method is too draconian, and because it could basically requires a prisoner to pay more money, would essentially be too deterrent, and that, you know, the purpose of the statute is not simply to eliminate filings by prisoners, but to eliminate the frivolous ones and encourage the meritorious ones. He also makes a constitutional avoidance argument, says that the statute needs to be read in a way that would avoid infringing on a prisoner's right of access to the courts, and then he also makes an administrative feasibility argument, saying that the simultaneous or per case method is more complicated than the per prisoner or sequential method of paying these back. And basically the argument boils down to, under the per prisoner approach, all that the prison, the custodian of the prisoner, has to do is sort of keep track of the order of the filing fees and then just cut one check to one court. And then when that's done, then they cut a check to the next court. Whereas the per case or simultaneous system would have the prison that has to coordinate the payments, figuring out how many there are, and, you know, cutting different checks, potentially very small amounts, to different courts. The United States, in response, you know, responds similarly with a textual argument, a contextual argument, a purpose argument, and then responds to the constitutional avoidance and some of the policy arguments. And the textual argument basically boils down to what I had mentioned before, which is that there's no dispute that other parts of the statute, including 1915b1, which discusses what the prisoner has to pay for the initial filing fee, as well as b3 and b4 and other parts of 1915, all refer in the singular to a particular case. And the United States' argument reduces to B2 is part of that larger scheme, and in fact, B2, which is the provision on which the prisoner relies, is triggered by B1. So B1 says, for every case you file, I'm paraphrasing, but for every case you file as a prisoner, you have to pay an initial filing fee. Once you've paid, you know, if you have the money, once you've paid that initial partial filing fee, then here is how the remaining payments are calculated on a monthly basis. And so the United States' argument is, look, this is all part of one large scheme that envisions and discusses how a prisoner has to pay in each case. It does not indicate that there's, you know, one, the first case should be treated differently from the second case or the third case or the fourth case, that every case there is a requirement that the prisoner pay the fees over some period of time. In responding to the contextual arguments, they say, you know, in terms of the what happens after there are five cases, and why hasn't Congress specifically talked about what happens in the sixth case or the seventh case, the government's response is Congress didn't think that that would happen very much. There is in the Prison Litigation Reform Act a three strikes provision that prevents prisoners from filing more cases if courts have dismissed as frivolous or malicious three cases, therefore three strikes. And so the argument that the United States makes is if you're a person or a prisoner who has up to five cases, you're probably already going to have triggered the three strikes provision. The other argument that I found interesting was, again, that $10 minimum argument. You know, what is the point of the $10 minimum? Is it to make sure that prisoners have some discretionary spending money? And, you know, is the per case or simultaneous method inconsistent with that? The United States' argument in response to that, it was twofold. The first is that the Bureau of Prisons actually interprets that provision differently and says they view that provision as saying that a prisoner's account is never allowed to dip below $10. And so in administering this scheme, although they do it on a per case or simultaneous basis, they never require a prisoner to pay more such that it would dip the account below $10. They also say that, you know, to the extent that there is a concern about discretionary spending, the prisons are constitutionally required to provide, you know, all of the basics of life. In terms of the purpose arguments, the United States' argument is that the purpose is different, that the very purpose of the Prison Litigation Reform Act is to deter frivolous lawsuits. They take issue with the idea that there's a balance between deterring frivolous lawsuits and encouraging meritorious ones. And they say, look, the whole point here is to deter frivolous lawsuits. And that is why there needs to be this simultaneous payment system, because otherwise the second case and the third case and the fourth case that are filed, there's no greater deterrent effect to a prisoner. And they also point out that, you know, if the court were to adopt the per prisoner sequential method, there could be cases that are never paid off. There's a serious question about what happens when a prisoner gets out of prison and he or she still has payments that are due, filing fees that are outstanding. There is possibly no liability then, and secondarily, there's no collection mechanism. The statute provides that the money is swept out of the prisoner's account by the custodian or the warden or the prison that is holding the prisoner. Once the individual is out of prison, there may not be a method for that. And then in terms of constitutional avoidance, they say there's no fundamental right to file without paying the fee, and they also say that there's a safety valve, and there is, which says that, first of all, if you don't have the money, you can still file a suit. Second of all, even if you've suffered the three strikes rule, there is an exception under the statute for prisoners who are in imminent danger. So the government's argument is that the constitutional avoidance principle doesn't need to apply. So let's turn to the opinion, which is actually quite short. A unanimous opinion issued on January 12, 2016 by Justice Ginsburg for all nine justices, because it preceded Justice Scalia's death. It is only 8 pages long, and somewhat unusually for a Supreme Court opinion, it actually has it talks about the background, but then it has two sections that basically walk through the arguments I have just explained. 2A is really just a summary of the prisoner's argument, and then 2B is a summary of the government's various responses. And then, starting on page 7, in perhaps the shortest analysis I have seen in a written opinion, a signed opinion, not a summary reversal, the Supreme Court decides this case in two paragraphs, and it essentially boils down to the textual argument. They say that, as the government contends, the whole statute talks about single cases, and so the prisoner is required to pay back the fees in each case. There is no contemplation of this idea of a sequential ordering, that the second case would somehow be treated differently from the first case. And then in one paragraph, the court dismisses the contextual and purpose arguments essentially as not persuasive. So that's essentially it. The circuit split that has divided the courts for a while has been resolved, and prisoners, you know, under the Prison Litigation Reform Act, have to pay their filing fees back on a per case or simultaneous basis. And I think to the extent that there's really any broader principles to take from this, it's that the court still has a fairly strong commitment to the text of a statute, and I think where the text of a statute is clear, it will adhere to it without really giving a lot more consideration to non-textual arguments.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.